Over the last few weeks, we've been talking about this introduction to study on hot button issues. There are a few more things that I want to bring up in this regard as we prepare to talk about some of these more difficult cultural issues, things like transgender issues that have arisen, things like homosexuality, about marriage, divorce, and remarriage, about what's going on in our schools. You know, there's a lot of things that Satan is using to attack our country, but more importantly, what he's really after are us. He's after the church. I mean, those who are outside the church, you know, are already living under the domain of darkness. We, on the other hand, are trying to fight against his temptations, his schemes of trapping people under sin. We're trying to shine the light of the gospel upon them. And so today I want to move forward in these thoughts. Again, the Proverb 14:34, righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. And so that's you know, Solomon trying to point us toward righteousness, toward living godly, even in the present day of evil influences. And so there is this idea there that as Christians, we are to, because we know the attacks are coming, it's imperative upon us to protect and to guard ourselves, the church, to guard our children. Turn to James chapter 1 and verse 27. I want you to notice what James has to say. James 1:27. James writes that religion, talking about Christianity, is religion that is pure and undefiled before God. The kind of religion, I know that word in some circles has taken on a negative meaning, but we can't let the world steal that from us. That's a right thing, religion. We're religious people, or we should be. And so James says religion that is pure and undefiled before God is what? It gives us three things, doesn't he? What are those three things? To help orphans, to visit widows, and what? To keep yourself undefiled, unstained by the world. Now, Colossians 1 and verse 13, Paul gives us the paradigm of our existence. What is it? Colossians 1:13, we have been delivered from the world of darkness and have been transported or moved, brought into the kingdom of his dear son. And so he's setting up like this conflict that's going on. Romans chapter 7, Paul talks about that conflict in his own life. And he spends a lot of time there discussing this war that's going on inside of all of us. And so, as we think about this conflict, it's important that we soberly consider what's going on. Go to 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5. Somebody read verses 8 through 11, please. 1 Peter 5, 8 through 11.
Sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about, seeking whom he may devour, whom resist steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. But the God of all grace, who hath called us unto his eternal glory by Christ Jesus, after that ye have suffered a while, make you perfect, establish, strengthen, settle you. To him be the glory and dominion forever and ever. Amen.
All right, so Peter says here, as he's closing out his letter, he's kind of giving some final admonitions. What's his final warning?
Your adversary, the devil.
And exactly. And so he begins by saying, be sober-minded, is the way it's translated in the ESV. Some of them will just have sober there. But when you think about sober-minded, what's the... he's not talking, of course, drunkenness necessarily, but being sober-minded means what?
Clear-minded.
Understand what? What?
Everything's under control.
Everything's
control
under
control.
Okay.
Should be.
Or say
something. Clear judgment.
Clear judgment. And so we need to be real. We need to live in reality. And so I think that's his point here, is understand the war, the battle you're in. Satan isn't going to leave you alone. He's not going to stop attacking. He'll even talk about in the letter how that some of you are going to be in danger, real danger of your lives. So be sober-minded about it. Be right thinking here. Understand that. Be sober-minded. Be what? Vigilant. What does it mean to be vigilant?
Aware.
Aware.
On alert.
On alert. This idea that you are preparing yourself. Now, what does Satan try to get us to do? Is to go to sleep, right? He's trying to ease us into trouble. He wants us to relax. He wants us to get consumed by other things, to take our attention away from the real battle and to focus on other things. We can't do that. There's so many things in our life that fight for our attention. Think about the things in your life that fight for your attention. Yes, ma'am. At any time, we could fall. Galatians chapter 6. Paul writing the Galatian brethren, he says, if anyone is overcome in any transgression, you who are spiritually minded, restore such a one. And then what is that little tagline he puts on the end of it? What's that? Yes. Consider yourself. Make sure, you know, the same thing that overtook this brother or sister who's now wandered off into sin, as you're trying to bring them back, remember, this could be you. If you go to 1 Corinthians chapter 10, now we will focus a lot on 13, good verse. You know, no temptation has overtaken man, but is such as common to all men. Right, we remember that, but God will not let you be tempted beyond what you're able to overcome, but with the temptation will provide a way of escape. But go back just a verse there. How does he begin that thought? Or what's the preceding thought?
Let him that thinks he stands take heed lest he fall.
Let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. So that's the preliminary thought to what he says in 13 about temptation. Right? Take heed. And so we need to be watchful about ourselves and about what's going on. And so we need to guard ourselves. Let's go to Acts 20. Acts 20, what's going on here as you get later in the chapter? Paul has arrived at Miletus. And he calls for the whom?
Elders
of where? Church. Of the church of Ephesus, right? This church where he spent 3 years at one time working and worshiping. Well, he doesn't want to go into Ephesus, and so he says, you guys, elders, come and meet me here. I have some thoughts for you. Because where is Paul headed?
Jerusalem.
Where he believes this is the end of his life. I believe, if you read Acts, I believe he thinks, he doesn't know for sure, but I think he thinks this is it. And so he has some final thoughts, some warnings, some admonitions for them. And so he gathers the Ephesian elders, and he has some thoughts. Somebody read for us verses 26 through 31, please.
Therefore, I testify to you this day that I am innocent of the blood of all men, for I have not shunned to declare to you the whole counsel of God. Therefore, take heed to yourselves and to all the flock among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers, to shepherd the church of God which he purchased with his own blood. For I know this, that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. Also from among yourselves men will rise up, speaking perverse things, to draw away the disciples after them. Therefore, watch and remember that for 3 years I did not cease to warn everyone night and day with tears.
Okay, so thanks, Harry, for reading that. So he says, I'm innocent of all blood. What's he talking about with that? What's he mean, I'm innocent of all blood?
I've taught you the gospel, so I'm not responsible for your death to sin.
Okay, he says, I've taught you the gospel.
He told them what they needed.
He told them what they needed. And doesn't he really emphasize both on the front, 26, and on verse 31, he emphasizes what? Not only that I taught you, but I reminded you that I have been consistent in warning you about things. I've made it my life's goal. He says it, you know, there that I have taught you the whole counsel of God. I've reminded you with tears. I've admonished you. I've warned you night and day. So he's trying to emphasize it, isn't he? He's trying to emphasize what? I did my part.
You know the truth. It's on
you. You know the truth, and I've reminded you of the truth. I have preached to you over and over again. Now, what's the particular warning here? I don't believe that he's talking. He actually tells us exactly what he preached to them over and over again.
False teachers are going to come in.
He's warned them about false teachers, about false ideas and theologies that are going to arise. Now, I think it's interesting from church history. I've mentioned this before, but Ephesus is one of those congregations who fell off into apostasy pretty early on. You go read Polycarp and some of the other guys and read their writings. They struggled later on, and some of the apostasy of the church began in Ephesus. Isn't that interesting? Did they heed his warning? Maybe for a time. For a time, it doesn't seem like it came true. It seems like Paul is giving us a prophecy.
We still have to do that today, Brian. We still have to be on guard for people that come in and, you know, and see Trojan that have bad intent.
Exactly.
And it
does happen. And so there's a warning here for us as well, and that's the emphasis for this class, is that we need to heed the same warning today. This is not a generalized, this is not a specific warning just for Ephesus. It's for the whole church. I mean, look at Galatians. Galatians 1. He says, verse 6, I marvel. I am stunned. I am shocked that you are so suddenly or so quickly removed to another gospel, which is not truly another gospel. And he goes on to that 6 through 9, talking about, you know, the church in Galatia was struggling in the first century with false doctrine. And so, so living now, today, what should we take away from it?
To keep our guard up.
To be vigilant, to keep our guard up. against the wiles of the devil. Ephesians chapter 6, Paul says, put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to what?
Withstand.
Earlier in that same book, he says that we are to walk circumspectly or wisely, for the days are what?
Evil.
Now, well, I won't get into that. But we need to walk wisely, circumspectly. We need to be, as Peter would say, 1 Peter 5:8, we need to be sober-minded. We need to be vigilant. Now, in regard to a person, so the way we handle this is different whether we're talking about individually or the church. Because we have different tasks, both from a congregational standpoint and from a personal. Now, the goal is the same for both, isn't it? The goal is the same. But how it affects me as an individual Christian is a little different than it does the church. We have two different tasks that we need to do. We need to work together as a team, as a church, and as an individual to uphold those things. And I believe that's kind of what Paul's getting at here. Gary?
I think the thing we have to remember in reference to what we're talking about here is whether we like to think of this way or not, the church is an enemy to the world. That's the way the world looks at us. We are the enemy. And they're looking for any crack anywhere that they can expose. Mm-hmm. And that's why the be on guard is as important. I know when we first came here, and that when we had elders, when you come here and chose this to worship here, we used to sit down with the elders and meet with them, and the elders found out where you was at. You know. And that, in my opinion, was guarding against wolves.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so let's think about this from an individual standpoint. As individual Christians, how does this apply to my life? Number one, James 1:27, how does it apply?
Practice pure religion.
I have to, my personal life, I've got to be on guard of me, number one, that I don't wander off. Am I in line with the gospel? Am I living up to the light of Christ? Because if you have a Christian who, or a congregation, either way here, who is not living the way they're supposed to be, how effective are we going to be to standing up to the false things that Satan, or the attacks that Satan brings against us? We're not going to be very successful. I've been in a congregation where we had members who were openly living in sin. I've been in one where we had elders openly living in sin. Now, how effective is that congregation or those individuals going to be in fighting false doctrine?
You're never going to be successful.
Right? So number one, for me, pure and undefiled religion before God is what? To keep yourself unspotted. So number one, I've got to guard my own life from sin and from the attacks. Number two, how does that impact me in standing up for the truth? Now, that also at the same time doesn't mean I'm perfect. I know that. But people should see Christ living in us. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4. So I can read verse 15.
By speaking the truth in love, they grow up in all things into Him who is the head, Christ.
Okay, so you think of that idea, speaking the truth in love. Right? Me as an individual Christian, this is really impacts how I reach out to others, isn't it? Speaking the truth in love. I think it it implies two ideas. Number one, the truth is not some hammer that we use to beat over the head of those who are doing wrong. I'm not trying to beat somebody into a pulp with the truth. I'm not accomplishing my goal. Go to the book of Revelation, chapter 2, when again, Ephesus, interestingly enough, Jesus speaking to Ephesus. Did Jesus have a problem with Ephesus' handling of the truth? Nope. You won't read it. Near the end of the first century, Ephesus isn't having a problem with truth. What are they having a problem with?
They left their first love.
Their motives have become distorted, haven't they? It seems to be that they are beating people over the head with truth. The goal is not to save the sinner, but to win an argument. Now, Jesus actually commends them for standing up for the truth. Let's don't miss that. He doesn't say that's bad.
It's the way to do it.
But it's the way, it's the attitude. Number one, I think Ephesians 4:15 is speaking to us that our attitude, our motive has to be in line with Christ. That does not mean, however, as some have misused this, to say that we should not say hard things. I think this also means that you and I have to be willing to get uncomfortable with people, even especially people we care deeply about.
And the world has tried to change this from speaking things in love to blanket acceptance. Mm-hmm. That if it's not blanket acceptance, you don't love me.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You gotta mean what I am.
Ms. Tara.
Mm-hmm. And in the church, we have to do it in love, because sometimes when people are doing things, especially if they haven't been in the church very long, they may not know. They're not doing it.
Exactly.
They just don't know. Especially if we've been raised in the church all our life, we sometimes take it for granted that people should just know that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't.
They don't. And so that's why we have to be understanding of that. And you can look at examples of this in the book of Romans and the book of Corinthians in regard to eating meat. That's just an example of the first century. You had brethren who believed it was a sin to eat meat. Now, Paul says it's not. That's sold in the marketplace. Now, it would be a sin if I went into the worship of an idol and I participated in that. Yeah, that's a sin. But just for me to go buy meat in the marketplace, take it home and fry it up, grill it, right? There's nothing wrong with that. However, I shouldn't use that liberty, you'll say in the Corinthian letter, as a way to harm the faith of someone else. And so I need to be willing to speak the truth in love. And so I need to give my brethren time to gain that understanding.
That's where he's talking about milk. You should eat meat, but you're still drinking milk because you don't grow.
So individually, again, from the individual's perspective, I need to continue to speak the truth, and I need to consider my motive, but I still need to speak the truth. If I see somebody who's doing something that's harmful to their soul, am I being loving by just letting them continue in that?
No.
Just because I don't want to feel uncomfortable, or I use the excuse of, well, I just don't want to hurt them. What's the greater harm? Letting them continue to wander away from the truth? Now, take a weak brethren in the church. They've been converted. We all have things that we're working on. They have things maybe in their life that they have yet to overcome. They've been obedient. How do I deal with that? Let's say they have some sin in their life that they've yet to understand they have to stop doing. I can't think of an example top of my head, but as a Christian, how do I deal with that situation?
You're supposed to go to them, talk to them.
Privately.
One person can go to them if they're in church.
Here's an example. This happens a lot. Say you've got a young Christian who's obeyed, but yet they haven't really understood the need to be here. We see them maybe on Sunday mornings, but that's it. The rest of the time, they're not here. Now,
I believe it's imperative in Scripture that we meet with the brethren as much as possible on our part, and that we not be slack in our attendance. Well, how do I deal with that? I've got a young Christian who's not yet understood the need to be here. As a Christian, I need to speak the truth in love. I need to find a way to reach out to them in a loving way and say, hey, I'm wanting you to understand, you need to be here, right? How do you do that? Huh?
It could be. It's all about how you do it. Hey, baby, I know you're young, you're new. Can I pick you up on Sunday so you don't have to use your gas to get here? I mean, it's all about how you word it and the example that you set.
Exactly. Now, I'll go sign now. Yeah. I mean, maybe we just sit down. Hey, I'd love to sit down and study with you. I know you've not been a Christian very long. Can we sit down and just study together? I mean, both of us can grow in this, and then you talk about those things.
The thing you don't want to do is become that person that they look at and say, well, if that's what a Christian is, I don't want any part of it. Mm-hmm. And that happens too often.
Yes. And that's true to a certain extent. Some people... Yeah, some people will use that as an excuse. Also, I think we have to be careful about not saying anything because we don't want to be seen that way. I think that's the problem. Because wouldn't it be just easier just to let them continue the way they are? We know it's wrong, but we just let them continue because I don't...
That should bother us. It shouldn't be easier. It really should.
I know.
We make it easy.
Well, and Christians have also taken the standpoint that's between you and God. I'm going to stay out of it. But it's between all of us and God. We have to teach.
Is it Tom Hall? What's his name? There's an old country music singer who had a song, you know, Me and Jesus Got Our Own Thing Going On.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, who is that? Who?
Tom T.
Hall. That's it. That's Tom T. Hall. Thought it was. But is that true? The emphasis seems to be, you know, me and Jesus got our own personal relationship. You stay out of it. I got my...
But it's not true.
It depends on if it's scriptural.
Yeah.
But it's not true.
Their relationship is
scriptural. Yeah. And so I think it's imperative on us to reach out in a kind, loving way because we don't want people to continue in sin, right? And so we need to do it in the most loving way we can. But sometimes that means we speak the truth firmly, though, doesn't it? Oh, go ahead. I'm coming to you, Tori.
I was just going to say that you have to be careful that you do speak, though. Because if you don't speak, then you're in trouble.
Yeah, and that's kind of my point. Yeah, exactly. It's not love. I'm just saying, Tori. It's not loving to just let somebody continue in a false idea. And maybe it's just as simple as they don't understand. Unfortunately, sometimes they're not listening. Go ahead, Tori, and then I'll come to you, Harry. Exactly. And a couple of things I want to emphasize there. Number one, I think relationship. That should not be the only thing you talk to them about. Right? You need to have a personal relationship. Right? We need to get to know people. I think that's... And number two, it's never to condemn. Even Jesus' task was not to condemn the world, John 3:17. He did not come to condemn the world. We did that ourselves. Right? But that the world might be saved through him. And so... We should never go to someone to condemn them. That is never the motive of, or should never be, the motive of a Christian. I'm not looking to condemn anybody, because then I have to condemn myself and I'm in big trouble. Let me, Harry, and then I'll go back to Si.
I like the word patience. Mm-hmm. We need to learn to be patient. I like the figure. They're like a baby, but they have to become a child, teenager, and hopefully one day an adult. If we're not careful, we don't realize that.
Absolutely.
Mr. Harry, I prayed for patience one time, got three more kids. I'm off that bandwagon.
To add what Harry said, what I was thinking, like with patience, it's a tiered process. Like you say, it might be that you have that just general conversation like Tori talked, and then you recognize they're not coming to services or whatever, and then you do offer a ride. Well, you get rejected on that. Well, then let's study and. They might study with them, but they might not pick up on it on the first. And it could escalate to where you do have to be more stern and specifically, hey, this is what you're doing wrong, but still in a loving way. But like I say, it's a patiently tiered process sometimes to get to the end goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And we also have to understand people are different. You notice if you raise kids, I bet none of your children are the same. And they all respond to things differently. Right? And so the way we deal with our kids is different, isn't it? Maybe I'm the only one to experience that, but I notice our boys are not the same. And the way we approach them is a little bit different. The way they respond to correction and things. And so the only way to know that is to get to know them. You need to know them a little bit over time. And so I think that's important. Somebody else?
Mm-hmm. Make sure that God helps us to say things.
Ask for wisdom, James says.
Yep. If we don't say something, that's going to offend them, make the situation where they would not come back.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to lead by example. I know there was a period of time when I was not attending anywhere and had started going on Sunday mornings, was not going any other time. And the person that approached me on it said, well, I'm not there on Wednesdays either, but I heard you haven't been coming, so what's going on? Just as an example there, I was like, you're not there, why are you talking to me about it?
And it goes back to the first point, pure and undefiled religion, right? We,
live it if
we're going to talk. Yeah, Ralph. The world is not going to encourage us to be more faithful. That's not its goal, right? And I'm talking about in a generalized way. It's just not the emphasis of our culture. It's not an emphasis of the world as a whole. It's at conflict with God. So it's invariably a conflict with a true believer. And so that's a super important point. Yes, absolutely. And again, Galatians 6:1, right? Lest you be carried away, right? Or given into the same temptation. So I think it's emphasis on all of us. Now, before we end this class, so we can see our culture is degrading into more sin. I mean, it's obvious. But that's been a perpetual problem, hasn't it? Throughout time. Me as an individual, am I going to change the culture?
No.
No. And I don't think Jesus puts it on us. God does not put on us the need to change the culture. That's not our job. I think our job is to change the destiny of an individual or an individual's in our lives. That's where we have power. Right? Our ability
to change the world is in changing an individual's destiny. And I think that's the way we have to look at it. We're going after those individuals who are desperately seeking God. Now, there is no way for us to investigate somebody's heart to determine whether this particular individual is going there. And so we're not to be inspectors of hearts. That's not our job. Our job is not to inspect hearts. Our job is just to simply sow the seed. Remember, the sower, he just throws the seed out and it scatters everywhere. And that's what we need to do. And so we need to see each individual in our lives as an opportunity for the gospel. And that's how we change the world, through one person's life at a time. Now, as the church, I want to spend the last... Do you have your hand? As the church, is there a little bit of emphasis change? If we go back to Acts 20, what's the task of the church in regard to the attacks of Satan? Number one, what does the church have to do? What's its number one job?
Save souls.
Is to guard the church from the attacks of Satan. Number one is to guard the church. What does he say to the elders? To shepherd the flock. All right? He says to them, verse 28, pay careful attention to yourself. That's kind of dealing with that individual thing that we just talked about, isn't it? He says, the elders, pay careful attention to yourselves and to what?
All the flock.
The Holy Spirit made you overseers. To what?
Feed.
To feed or to care or to shepherd the church of God, which he obtained with his own blood. And so the church, number one task is to guard those it has been given into its care. Now, we don't have elders here. Hopefully soon, one day soon, God's going to bless us with elders, and they'll be given special tasks in this regard. But each member of the Sanford Church of Christ has a task, and that's to help to guard the church. And so what does that mean, to guard the church? How are they to guard or to shepherd, to feed, to care? Okay. So every individual Christian has the task of making sure that what's being taught is the truth. You have a job to do. One of your jobs is to make sure I'm teaching the truth. Right? And me, along with every teacher who gets in front of the group and teaches, that's our task. That's what we do together. We need to guard the teaching of the church.
That means we need to know what our children are being taught also.
Yes, it does.
Just from the pulpit.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's an approach to that, not just for time's sake. I don't have time to go over it, but Jesus tells us how to do that. Right? If somebody's teaching false doctrine, how do we handle that? Well, we go to them individually, and we try to work it out. If that doesn't help, then we take somebody with us so that we can establish the issues and hopefully can overcome it. And then there's a process going beyond that to bringing them, you know, before the whole congregation. And so there's a process. And we see that same thing played out with Apollos, don't we? When Aquila and Priscilla taught that he wasn't teaching the full counsel of God, what did they do? They went privately, they just sit down with him and said, hey, you know, you're doing a wonderful job, but we need to think about something. And they taught him the truth, and what happened? He went on to proclaim the truth. He had a kind enough heart, an humble enough heart to accept the truth. So we need to guard that. We also need to care for each other individually. We are given the responsibility as a congregation
and this relates back to the individual part of it, is we need to look around. Is there somebody struggling? Now, specifically, elders are given this task, but I think all of us participate in this, of caring for one another's needs. If we see somebody struggling spiritually, it's incumbent on us to reach out and say, hey, how can I help you? You know, let's sit down and talk. Now, again, this goes back to what Tori mentioned earlier. We need to have a relationship with each other. So we're to guard the church. Now, is the church, is it given the task of changing cultures? Are we given the task of changing the direction of America? We're not. We're not. And you know what? If we try to make that our goal, we're going to be unsuccessful. That's not our job. Our job is to do what we can in our community. And what is that?
To
teach the word.
Be an example.
And so I think there's a real emphasis on that. I'm out of time this week. But next week, we'll get into some of these deeper discussions and move forward in them. Thank you so much.